everybody. Welcome back to Sales is King. This is Dan Sixsmith. I'm your host. Glad to be with you. And we've got another great episode, another great guest. We're on a roll here, which is great. Ryan Staley is with us, who's a fellow podcaster. He's in the middle of a lot of exciting things right now around AI. He's the CEO of an AI transformation company, thought leader, works with dozens and dozens of companies, helps chief revenue officers, CEOs, and I'm so super excited to have Ryan on the program. Ryan, welcome.
Thanks, Dan. Happy to be on, man. Looking forward to this. Looking forward to chopping it up with you and nerding out on everything, sales, AI, you name it, man.
Yeah, I love it. You know, there's so much change going on right now, and I think it's such an exciting time, you know, to kind of grab the reins and lead. But we're going to get into it, but I'd like to go back a little bit in kind of the early days and how you first got interested in kind of the sales and selling arena.
Yeah, it's funny. So there's a couple, I would say, key moments in my life that that triggered me for that. So the first one was when I was literally a busboy, right? At a, this was, I don't know, probably I was 16, I think, at the time, making a whopping $3.75 per hour plus tips. So as you can imagine, that's not a needle mover. I'm not 100 years old either. That's just what they used to pay back in the late 90s. And so effectively, I saw a sign that said, you know, basically it's for a sales job, and it said, make, I think it was $16.75 an hour. And so I was like, wow, that sounds amazing, right? And so I went to the group interview, and it was for selling Cutco knives. Which, you know, I was like, all right, I'm on board. You know, they show you the example where they cut a knife through basically like a lead pipe. You know, and it's all very glamorous.
What every consumer is looking to do, right?
So, oh yeah, because when don't you want to cut a lead pipe in half with a knife? Right,
it comes up at least once a week.
Yeah, and then you know the end game of that effectively is, and I'm giving you the bridge version because there's another aspect that hit me. But basically, it was like, all you have to do is you get paid by the hour, and you just sell to your parents' friends and your parents' network. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. So I got so excited, I backed out the car, which was my parents' minivan with wood grain siding at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Basically bumped into a pole. But I'm like, that's right. I'm going to make so much money with this that it doesn't matter if I cause a little damage to the car. Get home, tell my parents on it. And my parents are like, there is no way in hell you are going to do that job and pitch our friends constantly. And so then I also had to tell them, oh, well, by the way, I had a slight bump in the car. Well, that was like $600, which was a lot at the time. And so that, I think, kind of triggered my interest because it was paid on performance. I saw my parents literally busting their ass. My dad was a cop. My mom was a teacher. And
my dad was also, really... by the way.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
man. It's crazy.
So we got that bond there.
Yeah, dude. I mean, like, I don't know. So they had the blue collar Midwest work ethic. Mm-hmm. And effectively what happened was they would work their ass off and they would just get incrementally rewarded for it. So I saw sales as a vehicle to basically get rewarded on results. And then later in college, I got a job where I was selling door-to-door advertising and became one of the top, you know, 10% reps in the country by doing that and made a lot of money over the summer. I think, I don't know, it was like $4,000, $5,000 or something like that over the summer, which was good. At that time. And so that was the other thing where I'm like, okay, there's some teeth here. And then basically I was all in from that point moving forward.
Gosh, I love that, you know, and door to door. I mean, that is like the true test of selling. You know, I've heard so many great stories. And one guy I had on, you know, he was talking me through, I forget what he was selling door to door, but he said it was brutal. You know, and you get doors kind of slammed in, you know, the quote unquote door slammed in your face. But he said when he finally made one sale, he realized that it was just a numbers game and he kept going. So it just a matter of time, you know, like certain number of doors, you might get rejected, but then finally you're going to get it. And that's how he was successful. But what a way to just build up, you know, a tolerance for rejection. And just super ambitious. So I give you a lot of credit for that. So what was your kind of dream as a kid? What did you want to be kind of originally?
You know what, which is funny. Like, I always thought, like, I wanted to be a professional athlete, right? Like 90% of the young men in the population, right? Or boys, I should say not young men, boys at that time. And then I actually did play football in high school. We won state, we're undefeated, nationally ranked, and then played in college, but it was a Division III school, but I got effectively like a scholarship there, which was like a grant. Division III can't give scholarships, they give grants. And so that was rewarding. But I think it was like halfway through school, I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm not gonna make the pros, right? Like, and so I really need to start focusing on what I want to do at that point. So this is probably like, I don't know, sophomore or junior year. So I quit football. I studied abroad, which was awesome. Amazing experience. And then I was kind of obsessed with the idea of advertising. But what happened was, like, I did end up selling advertising, but I couldn't get an advertising job, an entry level advertising job to save my life. You know what I mean? So, so I think what happened was the only job I really could get was within sales to kind of start. Actually, I didn't mostly applied to sales jobs, I guess you could say sales or advertising. Sales kind of bubbled the surface. I had the shit sandwich job number two, where I had an inside sales job, had to make 250 dials a day, figured out a way to make that work. And so I think, like, the door to door, you know, selling yellow page advertising for businesses, and then that were really foundational in, like, character, grit building, all those kind of areas at an early point in my career.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it's the phone version of door to door, you know,
which
is, you know, it's just so rough. So then you kind of progress. Take us from there. So then what are some of the next jobs where you start to really hone your sales skills?
Well, that was good. I was there for like 2.5 years, even though, like, it was so funny because there were so many things going on at that company that I'm just like, oh, this is just the way work was, right? But it wasn't.
And this is in Chicago at the time?
Yeah, it was in Chicago, and it was like selling tech training to CIOs and CTOs of investment banks and brokerages. So like the Merrill Lynch's, the JP Morgan's, the Deutsche Bank's.
Yeah.
And so from there, I'm like, all right, the big thing was to get into outside sales, which is a little bit more complex, longer sales cycle. Did that, sold managed print services for a startup-ish company, right? Had no infrastructure, no enablement, anything. So did that from scratch, basically evolved, had an exit because I was an earlier employee because we got acquired by a Fortune 1000 company, and then transitioned into enterprise software for a few years. That didn't work out. We were selling mobile application software in 2008, 2009, which was a terrible time to be selling it. I'm sure there's some things we could have done, but there's a lot of weird things that were kind of happening at that time that it just was a tough market to be in. And then basically what happened was I got recruited from someone I used to work with about being in management and turning around an underperforming office in that managed services space. So did that, turned them around, had some ups and downs there. But then they're like, hey, Ryan, we want you to start and move up market. We want to move up market. You're really good with this. So start that from scratch. So created a go-to-market, sales motion, enablement, everything, built a team, grew that from 0 to 30 million in ARR in 5.5 years. And we only had four salespeople. And so that was something that kind of put me on the map, I think, from a bigger picture perspective. And then I left that about 3.5 years ago and have been helping companies deploy those systems. And as of about 1.5 years ago, I made the shift into AI skill transformation just because I see like how big of an impact it could have on someone's life, not just in terms of time, but results. And so I would love to give that back to people as well so they could basically transform what's possible by integrating AI into their work.
Man, I love that. That's such a great story. And I imagine, like, the a lot of people we talk to, like the sports, your sports participation drives that kind of competition, competitive spirit that a lot of people leverage for success in sales. But what was the transition like from selling to then, you know, kind of managing and strategy? What was that like?
Well, The thing is like, I was always naturally a strategic thinker. I played a lot of gaming when I was younger, you know, from the Atari, Super Mario Brother games. And I always loved the strategy of trying to like figure out and beat each level. And so I think that transitions into some really good strategic thinking capabilities for a leader. I think though, one of the things I failed at as a leader to start was that, you know, like I told you, I grew up in a blue collar environment. Like I said, my dad was a cop. So it was a very, you know, top down authority way. Like, just what you do. You don't question
black
it.
And white.
Did you run into that too?
My dad used to say, whenever I went out at night, as a kid, he said, I'm going to be sitting in this chair waiting for you. So you better come back in good shape, because I'll be sitting right here and on time. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah. You know, so like that, so that, and basically that's the way they kind of manage, not just police, but military. Right. And so I think I had some of that built in me. So I try to manage people like that, because what was happening was I was getting pressed from the CEO and founder, and I was getting pressed from my team because he wanted to push really hard, but we had no systems or not even good tech enabled. And so, it was a combination of raw grit and perseverance as well as creativity. And so, but the part where I failed as a leader is I just kept pushing people and had insanely high expectations, which is good. But I don't think I led in the best way possible, because like I worked so hard at that time that people didn't want to work for me for a while, right? Because I was such a dick, right? Or, you know, a jerk to be around, because I was so crabby and I had no balance in my life. And so that was a really eye-opening moment for me. Once that happened, I got kind of a demoted, stepped down, and then had to like reinvent myself from the ground up and rebuild myself. And then that helped me become part of who I am today.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I have kind of a similar story, but I started out in the textile business 6,000 years ago. And, you know, I was in sales as an individual contributor, and then I was promoted into management. And it was the same thing. I kind of, you know, I was kind of, I wouldn't say a tyrant, but I was super driven, and it was just, you know, running the whole group into the ground. So they finally kind of had to say, hey, listen, brother, you know, you gotta lighten up here, you know, if you want to be successful. So, I totally get that. And then I had, you know, so for me, I moved from doing this textile thing for probably 20 years, where it was all about, you know, do you like this color? Do you like this pattern? To then transitioning over into the digital marketing agency world. And that's where I started to learn, you know, strategy and consulting and, you know, digital and all that stuff. So I'm very thankful for the experience I had, because I had to get out of textiles because that industry was just tanking, you know. And then in terms of learning to sell, I call it, you know, it was selling like your life depended on it, because I had a small family, a young family. The business, the industry was tanking, and literally it was like, you know, selling against, you know, there wasn't much money around, and it was really, so that taught me a little bit about super competition, and then making that transition. So super exciting. So you took the success that you had at that organization, and then you said, hey, let me go and do this for other companies. Let me start my business. So how did you kind of get your first customer, in your new venture at the time?
Yeah, I think, it's a great question. You mean when I went on my own, like when I started my own thing, like how did I acquire my first customer?
Yeah. So who was the first customer?
It was through a referral, actually. It was through a referral, and, it's funny. So my first couple customers happened, and, well, it was weird. That's not totally true. So I started off and I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. And here's the thing, like a lot of times you don't see in yourself what other people see in you and or what you've done, and you kind of discount it. At least I have, because I'm really hard on myself. And so when I first left it, even though I grew a group from 0 to 30 in 5.5 years, I didn't know that was a big deal. I just thought that's what people did, right? And so I'm like, oh well, I've only been a leader at this level, you know, I should just basically help salespeople, not help leaders or not help companies. And then what happened was, so I started doing things along those lines and basically sharing, because I created a whole enterprise motion from scratch. And like the thing I didn't know at the time is there's a kind of a limited market for reps that want to invest in themselves at that specific segment point that aren't having companies invest in them. Right. And so my go to market was a little bit off on that. And then what happened was I was talking to other people in my network, and then like company wise, they're like, hey, you know, so what have you done? What are you doing? And they're like, I'm like, oh, this is what I did. And they're like, oh, well, I want to learn how to do that. And then people started hiring me to help them with some of those areas, right? On the sales consulting side for CEOs. And so that's what kind of got me down that path. And then I started to more so productize what I was doing and focusing on. So it was somewhat repeatable. And then that's, you know, kind of the path I went down there.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. So I want to get deeper into this, but I want to talk a little bit about your involvement in some of these communities that you kind of started up or were the founding members that are really very, two that come to mind is this Pavilion, which is huge. And then what is it? Rev Genius is another one that I think is has a lot of folks. So how did you get involved in that? What was the genesis there?
Yeah, I think so. A couple of it, it's funny. So along that time, this was in like 2020 with COVID. So I started to get involved with Pavilion. Once I knew before I left that company and in late 19, I wanted to be out of there. Right. And so I always networked exclusively within the client base to try and for client acquisition, but not really for my career. And that was a big mistake that I made. And so I started doing that with Pavilion. And then eventually I was a chapter head and then basically an instructor at Chief Revenue Officer School for a year. And I'm doing some stuff for them right now for the Chief Revenue Officers and CEOs. So that's kind of how I got involved with that. It just evolved continuously. And then on the Rev Genius side, that was more in the beginning. So I met Jared through my podcast, through his podcast, and basically just kind of helped with some of the initial push on that, get them up and rolling. And so that's kind of how I got involved with those communities. I'm a Gartner ambassador now, too, for their sales community.
Saw that. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, man. And so, yeah, so those are a couple of things that I've been involved with, but it's good. I've met some really good people throughout those different communities, and it was like right around the COVID time. So it was a good opportunity to meet a lot of people fast, you know, in different areas that I wouldn't have access to.
They're really starting to take off now. People really want to, because there's so much that's new, right? People just want to share and learn, you know, what are other organizations doing? You know, I want to make sure I keep up. You know, we had Dr. Lisa Palmer on. I don't know if you know her. She's another subject matter expert. She went out and got a PhD in AI, which is like, you know, that's good. You know, that was a good career move.
But you know, I was talking to her while she was doing that. Yeah, it's funny. So yeah. I haven't talked to Lisa in a while, but
yeah. And I'm so happy I had butchered her podcast recording with a different platform, and I just pieced it back together and we got it out there. But, you know, she's been saying that, you know, companies are leveraging AI to, you know, some of the companies that have maybe fallen behind are now leapfrogging, you know, so things are moving and shaking. All bets are off. So it's, I think folks really want to learn, which we're going to get into with you. But before we do that, the podcast, tell me about that. The Scale Up Show. How did you start that? And, congratulations, you've got like almost 400 episodes. So you've been busy. Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah. It's been
I only have 220 to go to catch up to you, but anyway, tell me about it.
I mean, it's been a hell of a journey. I think it was one of those things where like I started to get attracted to podcasts around 2015, 2016, specifically for personal development. And I got burnt out on just talk radio, had a lot of time in the car, you know, and so that turned me on to it. And then I'm like, oh, this, I was following some like basically online marketing experts. And one of the things that they identified is like, hey, like, it's really good to have your own show, right? Because you could have access to people and create multiple layers of content. And so I started it, and I'm one of those, you know, I'm very persistent and I look at things over time. And so I was just like, you know what, this is great. And here's the thing. I mean, like, I don't know, it was really interesting. I've gone through stages and I'm about to relaunch the show with more of an AI focus because that's effectively what it has, but the branding and the messaging isn't. connected to that. So probably over the last maybe 5 months, I've been interviewing all like AI founders or folks in that space specifically, and then have a heavily focus on AI and go to market and how to integrate the two into your work. And so, so that's what I've been doing, but I've interviewed probably over, I think it's probably over like 300 different CEOs now specifically in that. And so the thing that I love is one, you know, you can get access to anybody if you do a good job and stay with it long enough. Two is like, you just learn so much and then you just meet really good people, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, so, so I got connected to a guy named Travis Chappell, and if you don't know his podcast, it's called Travis Makes Friends. It used to be Build Your Network, and he's a young guy that all he does is podcasting, but he basically said he knew nothing about networking, and he was the door-to-door guy I was telling you about. He knew nothing. Cool. Yeah, he knew nothing about networking, and he said by having these people on, he just learned and became an expert, you know, and then he kind of evolved it more out of that, you know, into more of a Travis Makes Friends things. But he's, you know, he's interviewed a lot of top people, and he's at the point now where they're doing the camera crews and the, you know, the whole bit going with people. So I'm a huge fan of that. And I love what you said about, you know, learning and just having access. Would you, so are you going to keep the same name, or are you going to try and do something more with an AI?
I'm going to rebrand the name, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, cause it's like, and I don't know about you, has your show evolved over time? Have you kind of tweaked and changed things?
Yeah, it definitely has. I mean, I took a year off, but, a lot of the early episodes was just me kind of, you know, doing modules, you know, almost learning on different aspects of sales, and then more of late, and I did occasional interviews, but now I'm really largely interview focused. And just with, you know, kind of authors, thought leaders, subject matter experts, B2B marketing and sales. I do want to try and get a little deeper into AI. And then I started a second podcast, which is called Power Fam, because I felt like, and it just came up kind of organically, but, you know, let's talk about high performance families. You know, let's talk about what's going on potentially behind the curtain with some of these people that we see and listen to all the time. And it's very, very interesting, you know, how people who succeed in business have developed, you know, kids that are incredible athletes, performers, and how do they go about their business? So the focus on that for me is how do we get a little more authentic and learn more about people in a kind of environment where we're getting almost less personal with a lot of the technology. So anyway, but keep going. Yeah. So so you're thinking about potentially taking more of a AI focused branding.
Well, I have been taking. I just need to update the naming and the branding. That's all. You know what I mean? So it's in alignment. I mean, I've been focusing on AI for like probably the last 6 months on my podcast. So it's like it's not a change material wise. It's just more branding and messaging and all those kind of components, right? So
yeah. Excellent.
But yeah.
So let's get into it a little bit. Yeah. Let's talk AI a little bit about it. Yeah, I mean, listen, you are you're in the middle of all this. So tell us what are the biggest things companies are wrestling with right now? You know, a lot of what I hear is they're overwhelmed. They know they have to be involved in it. They're not sure even where to start or how to create, you know, the right use cases. There's a gazillion apps and technology companies that are here today, gone tomorrow. You know, some of the VCs are saying, you know, they expect like one out of every 10 investment that they make to work out. So what are some of the big challenges you're out there helping with?
Yeah, I think like if we were to look at it with that, like the big challenges that I'm seeing are like, because that it's grown so much and because it's so popular now, everybody just attaches AI to whatever they do and say that they're AI. So it's gotten a little noisy to put it mildly. Right. So when I say AI with the things I'm focused on, let me be specific. So I'm focusing on right now exclusively how to integrate AI into people for skill transformation or basically human capital transformation, if you look at it. And so what that means is like there's a lot of talk about chief AI officers, and the chief AI officer's role is to basically be very have a great depth of technical understanding, have experience with AI models, be good with people, understand domain expertise, be able to communicate effectively at scale to technical and non-technical people to convey their ideas, be a strategic visionary, be able to do tactical work. Well, the problem with that is like the people that have all those skill fulfillments, they're not chief AI officers or CEOs, right? So this relates to sales too, because you see the same thing is instead of trying to have someone be excellent at 25 different jobs, you know, let's leverage AI to have them be really good at four or five key things that they excel and love to do. And then let's delegate the rest to AI, right? And so I look at it as kind of like the difference between the craftsman. If we go back to the Industrial Revolution before the assembly line was created, there was the craftsman, which was one person created a car, right? And it was very hard to do. It took a long time. There was high turnover. It was very hard to make. It would take 2 to 3 weeks to make a car, right? And then Ford is like, hey, why don't we just parse up what these people are doing in a repeatable task? Then he created the conveyor belt, right? Well, basically, productivity went through the roof. Cost to create the car went through the floor. And so I think that's what's possible right now with human capital or people. And now we have the ability to scale people for the first time ever in our career with white collar work. And so my focus is on enabling go-to-market teams for that so that they can leverage it across tools that are pennies on the dollar, like Copilot or ChatGPT or Gemini, and integrate that into everything that they do in a work. So that's the phase I'm helping companies deploy right now.
Super exciting. Where do you see, so obviously, you know, like when people look at AI, there's the opportunity and then there's the threat. Who's in trouble from a role perspective? You know, you look at some of the things going on out there, like Sports Illustrated just torching their whole writing staff. And I think the LA Times did the same thing. What type of people might be in trouble? And then, you know, what new opportunities are out there in terms of maybe new roles?
Well, there's a lot of people that are in trouble right now, I think, for a couple of reasons. One is because they're falling asleep at the wheel and they're not taking this serious. Yeah. And there's, you know, there's companies that are firing multiple groups of people, or they're just not replacing people that are leaving in large chunks, and because they're expecting, you know, like here, let me be real specific on this. So I've been talking to a lot of executives on it, and they're kind of in two camps. They're either for those that are like basically want to embrace AI, they either want their same employees to do multiples of work and what they're doing now, or they want less employees to do the same output that their current employees are doing now. That's kind of like the mindset that I'm seeing, and that's oversimplified, right? But that's the approach that I'm seeing it. So I think there's a lot of people that are just ignoring this. And it's like, it's kind of like, you know, if you are in the age, and let's not say 2000, let's say 2008, right? Let's just fast forward. You don't know how to use the internet, right?
Right.
That's what it's going to happen with people that don't know how to use AI. Like, you're going to get replaced by people with less experience, less talent, less wisdom than you, that could be 10 years younger than you, that just have taken the time to understand how to do it. So that's the risk. Here's the opportunity. At the same time, like, this is transforming and happening at a faster rate than any technology we've ever seen in our entire lifetime, entire history of man. So with that, it's ripe with opportunity for disruption or to create. And so if you just pick a lane on something that you want to specialize within AI, you have the ability to transform what's possible for you, your family, and your career. And because there's so many knowledge workers out there, that's where I see as an opportunity with, you know, what's possible. If, because there's companies, I tell you, there's executives of really large companies that don't even know how to use ChatGPT, right? Like, and that's like core foundational large language model technology that all the rest are built on. And so if executives don't know how to do it, you know, it's problematic. But that means there's opportunity. If you do know how to do it in your organization, you could elevate really fast and make yourself incredibly valuable by integrating that with your domain expertise.
Yeah, 100%. And it reminds me of what Gary Vaynerchuk said about, you know, the early days of email, where the executives were printing out all their emails, you know, and looking at them on paper. So like, to your last point, how does an individual, where do they start, right? If their company's not embracing AI, where do they start? Do they just start with simple, you know, ChatGPT, or how would you advise someone to start to get involved to understand this?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I would do is I would pick a tool, right? You could start with ChatGPT. If you're an Office 365 user, you could start with Copilot, or if you're a Google Workspace, you could start with Gemini, right? And basically what I would do is, instead of just for 15 minutes a day, instead of leveraging Google for something that you use, just use ChatGPT instead, right? So that's how to get started and really understand it, because you're going to start to see and get ideas just from using it. And the reason why that's the most critical big domino is because this isn't like other SaaS software. SaaS software does the same process, steady and consistent, with the same answer and output every time, with one, you know, or core results that it has. AI is like this, like, you know, right, with the large language models. It's like a jagged edge. So it's like a heartbeat monitor. And so what's going to happen is you're going to have tasks that you'll see. I'm like, holy cow, this does it better than me. And then you're going to see other tasks are like, holy cow, I can't believe it can't do this when it did the other thing. So it's basically like an alien life form that you have to understand how to work and integrate with it. And you could simply by just spending 15 minutes a day and using it instead of Google. And here's the thing that's going to blow you away. Like, Google is not very good when you test it against these models, or you test it against Perplexity, because you don't have to filter through all the crap, the spam, the advertisements, all those areas. So it's a much faster time and result output.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that, because I find myself today, that's like my search engine. Like, I'm using Perplexity and, you know, for almost everything. I'm not really going to Google as much anymore, unless I'm looking for a restaurant, you know, or something like that.
I know. Google's in trouble, man. I mean, they're in trouble. Like, just because now, granted, what's going to probably happen is Perplexity's got, this just released this week, they got like $1 billion valuation now. They have a big investment. So what's going to happen is there's going to start to become pressure for them to monetize that as well at a deeper level. And so you're going to see opportunities. They're going to probably start introducing some ads or something like that in there, and it's going to change it up. But right now it's amazing. So run with it, you know?
Yeah. I got a couple of more questions along these lines, and then we'll go into some personal things that I usually like to ask. Are there any success stories that you can point to at this point? Of a company that you're working with, or companies you've heard of that are leveraging AI to really start to move the needle, or is it too early?
No. I'm seeing success stories already. So, one company I worked with, the gentleman is the senior vice president and strategy and marketing. And he basically said that because of what I showed him and helped him set up, he could effectively do 90% of the work that 3 full-time employees did. Right. And that's as a part of his job, not even the full capability of his job. Right. I had another chief commercial officer state basically like, hey, with what you showed me, I could 10x the quality and quantity of work that I've done. Right. So I've seen situations like that. So those are a couple of things that come to my mind. What I'm really focusing now on helping companies deploy this at scale to teams instead of like an AI innovation collaboration hub internally, because it's expensive for companies to innovate with AI, but it's cheap for individuals too. And so by collecting those individual innovations, you start to get really, really big opportunities that are a byproduct of it. But it could be like, for example, saving another example is like there's just small amount of workflows you could leverage that'll save 10 hours a week, specifically within sales. You know, and it might take you 3 hours to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. So initially a lot of cost savings. Anything on kind of upskilling the sellers? Or things they're using to improve their engagement and win rates and breaking through the clutter?
Yeah, definitely. So, and it's funny, I just made a video on this the other day because I've been starting to put more stuff on YouTube because it's easier to show than on the podcast. But so one of the things that you could do is like, this comes rooted from a real life example. So I was sitting down with the senior director of sourcing at Lowe's Home Improvement, and he had like a $60 million annual cost savings budget and that he had a hit. And so one of the things that he mentioned to me in the meeting was he's like, hey, he's like, you know what? Your team does a really good job and you do a really good job of connecting and understanding specifically what I need, what's important to my job for our vertical, our company, our size. And he's like, 90% of reps that come in here, even as big as we are, don't know how to do that. Right. So that's Fortune 50. So if that's happening at the Fortune 50 level and 90% don't know how to do it, what do you think is happening to the rest of the the companies? Right. What do you think is happening in small and medium business? Right.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that you're able to do is effectively orchestrate and understand how a person's evaluated, compensated, the challenges they have in hitting their KPIs, and then the emotional factors they have. So that puts you ahead of 90% of the people just with your conversations alone, with your ability to connect. So that's like one example. That'll include or improve conversion rates. We're talking about skills on the other side. There's a lot of ways to kind of attack that. I mean, there's coaching you could leverage it for with role playing specific to the persona of your buyer. There's also rapid scale content consumption, kind of like Neo in the Matrix, where you could basically have a whole book summarized for you, customized to you, and then an execution plan created for you in 10 to 15 minutes. Right. So those are other examples. And there's tons more, but those are just a few ideas.
Yeah. And I think the underlying message is, you know, if you're in sales, you have to, you know, you have to have a personal development plan of your own. Like, you can't rely on the company. There's just so many things at your disposal today, whether it be, you know, online courses, some of the things we're talking about in AI. You can really give yourself a leg up, you know, and improve yourself by just doing this kind of personal development work. Is it, you know, a masterclass or a mastermind? Is it, you know, like we talked about, the online courses or watching videos? It's such a great time and opportunity to really potentially improve yourself. So hopefully a lot of folks will do that. And then the last question, just B2B sales in general. I mean, it's just the sellers are just getting beaten up, you know, in terms of the quota attainment is down. The buyers don't want to talk to sellers. They want to do it 100% online. They don't think they're adding any value. What's your take on what's going on in B2B and how do we get it better?
Yeah. Well, so there's a lot of different kind of ways to attack it. I think some things that folks struggle with that I've seen with the companies that I've worked with are, like, I think a lot of reps expect everything to be automated and simple for them. And like, sometimes the best ways to prospect are by sending a, you know, email sequence out to 10,000 people. You know, it's like, it's doing the small incremental things that they don't think of. Like, here's a mind bender that most tech companies don't leverage referrals, right? Like, they close in 75% of the time at 155% of the rate in terms of profitability, and nobody does them. Right. And it's because it's not an automated system yet. And I love automation. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm striking a balance of both of it. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges. I think the other is we've gotten so much into methodologies and frameworks and processes, but they're all internal facing and they're not really factoring in the emotional components and connection levers that you could have with people that are based on human nature that'll differentiate you versus everybody else. So that's second, and then third, last but not least, is quantifiable outcomes. I think it's really hard for a lot of people to identify that. And when I say quantifiable outcomes, I'm not just talking ROI or top line growth. I'm also talking about time saved, impact, areas like that. So,
yeah, I agree. And I think the key thing you said there is there's multiple things that you need to do. There isn't a silver bullet. that you're just going to go to and all of a sudden it becomes easy. You really have to leverage multiple different approaches. But this whole kind of garbage at scale that's being thrown around with, you know, some AI-driven messages that are impersonal, don't resonate, and now you can have 20 times as much going out, you know, is just not the answer. So super great stuff, really exciting. So let's talk a little bit about just, you know, you, and when you look back at your kind of career and success, any mentors or anyone come to mind that were kind of super pivotal in driving your success?
Yeah, I think, I think my parents really built in the work ethic that I needed to be successful. Mm. And do big things. So I think at a foundational level, it's like following by their example. That's one. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of like mentors, like I've had different leaders I've worked for that have had certain capabilities or things that they're really good at. Mm-hmm. I actually had a customer mm-hmm. that was really, really, that actually became a mentor to me. He was the CEO of a Fortune mm-hmm. 1000 company. And so mm-hmm. for him to give me insights that I wasn't aware of in blind spots that were so easy and simple for him. That was, you know, there's some good areas from that. So that's somebody who kind of comes to mind in terms of like some bigger picture mentoring. Right.
Yeah. I love that. And then, so thinking about this year and beyond, what are some of the goals that you've set for yourself and for your organization? And are you a goal? Do you write goals down and follow them up, or what's your process there?
Yeah, I think here's what I've started to realize with the goals, though. Like, I've done a good job of writing down goals and writing down outcomes that I want. I think the missing part that people have is like, what's the real tactical execution plan to achieve those goals? And then like, what's your consistency in terms of the repeated minutia crap that you have to do mm-hmm. to make that happen? And so yeah. I've lost my way with that a couple of times because of shiny ball syndrome or opportunities. And so I think like, so right now what I'm really focused on is, and the number one priority for me is to help companies with this AI skill transformation, because I think it could change people's mm-hmm. lives. I know it can change people's lives because all the things that I had to do the hard way and make sacrifices and not have time with my family, mm-hmm. I think that this could, not only let's put the money making aside. Like, I know it can help you make more money, yep. right? Like, but the fact right. that they could get back, if they can get back 10 hours a week and be better at what they were doing before while having 10 hours a week, and they could use that to be a bigger part of their children's lives, like that's really meaningful to me. And so at the same time, I think it'll future proof them for what's happening as jobs get more and more automated. And so those are two things that I really want to help companies deploy. So goal wise, like, I want to help as many companies as I can set that up. And then there's some phase two stuff that I'm not ready to talk about yet, because it mm-hmm. depends on some of the things I see in phase one, if that makes yeah. sense. But
mm-hmm. yeah, of course.
So that's kind of like my goal right now. And the leading indicators mm-hmm. are really good. But, you know, kind of what I mentioned is I got to do the tactical. Some of it's fun to do. Yeah. Some of it's the shit sandwich work that I had to do when I first started my career. Yeah. Right. So,
yeah, it's tough. You know, like you say, there's so many distractions today that you just have to kind of stay focused. Someone told me one time about the goal setting that they ask themselves, you know, why this is a goal. You know, they're trying to get kind of under the covers a little bit mm-hmm. to learn more about it. But I think that's great. And then last question, how do you define success? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think like it's not just money, and it's not just like yeah. how big your company gets or what you do anymore. I think that was more a young version of how I thought of things. And I think it's also like how you feel after you've spent time away from work and with your family or friends on the weekend. Like, do you feel good about yourself, and you feel good about what you're doing after that happens, right? Like, so I think a combination yeah. of two is like, let's do hard shit and make it happen yeah. and help transform yeah. the world. But at the same time, blend that with, you know, am I happy I got to spend time and, you know, take my family out to a movie night and go to dinner mm-hmm. and did I enjoy that? Right. Yeah. Like, so I think right. that's what success is marrying the two together. And they're not always going to be in perfect balance. You know, there's some times where others are going to take priority over others and vice versa. But to keep both sides of the equation is personal and professional, and then put that in a blender and have something you feel good about on both sides of the equation.
Yeah. No, I love that. That's awesome. And then one last question. Anybody on social? Are you a big social media consumer? Are there folks that you follow that you like, or you're two heads down?
Yeah, no, it's social media is really interesting. We could do a whole episode on social media. I post on LinkedIn daily and have the podcast and I have the YouTube. And so, right. I mean,
you're a producer for sure.
So I'm all over it, but you know, so for people that I enjoy, let's talk about podcasts. I think, you know, Marketing Against the Grain. I like what, Kieran Flanagan and, CMO of HubSpot are doing on there. I think that's cool because like, my background's obviously in sales, and I have been doing quite a bit of marketing over the last 3.5 years, but I always love to hear their take on marketing and AI. So that's one that I enjoy. That's someone who comes to mind now. You know, there's a lot of other people, but I think that's the first thing that comes to mind in terms of like what I enjoy in that kind of social media sphere, if that makes sense, as of right now. I mean, there's other folks that I listen to as well, but
That's awesome.
How about you?
I got to say, this was, God, I got a frog in my throat. So I do a lot of the motivation stuff. I like Gary Vaynerchuk. I mentioned him because he's just such a straight talking, you know, and he's just out there with kind of predictions. I like him. I like Ed Milet. I kind of listen to him. He's got some great guests on. He's one of the top shows, and
I like him.
Super, super motivating. Trying to think of who else. Those are a couple of my faves. There's the guy, I'm spacing his name, the guy that trained Jordan and Kobe.
Not David Goggins. I know who you're talking about, but
he's going to be angry that we forgot his name.
He is listening. Anyway, now. I know that he is listening.
Yeah, I'm going to get it. We're going to get some hate mail coming across the Sales is King wire. But anyway, no. So stuff like that, I just really kind of leverage that to just keep me moving. My one son, both my kids, you know, kind of listen to that stuff, and we kind of, you know, share clips back and forth to just keep kind of moving along and staying on kind of the cutting edge of what's going on out there. And then like you, I like to listen to some of the podcasts to hear how folks are conducting interviews, trying to get better with just interviewing people, you know, and have more of, you know, kind of better at that skill, which, as you know, probably just as you do more of them, you just kind of, you get a little bit better, and you, as long as you prepare and plan out, it's fun. But so I got to say, this was really, really great. I've really enjoyed getting to know you. I'm a big fan, and I'm really excited to see how things continue to go for you. And anything I can do to help, for sure, let me know. But really loved having you on. Wish you a lot of continued success. Back and see us after you continue to take the world by storm, you know.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. Time well spent. You asked some great questions, man. So looking forward to hearing this when it's released.
Yeah, for sure. And then how do folks, what's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, so if you heard me on this podcast and you're looking to implement this in your team, or you want to talk to me, just ryan@whalesellingsystem.com, or feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Just mention that you heard me on the show or heard us on the show talking, and just mention that in the connection request, so then we can get connected that way as well.
Fantastic. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in. Ryan, we're right at the top of the hour, so we can send you off to your next meeting, and enjoyed it. Talk to you all soon. Peace.